The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
People like me, Paddy, from the outside looking in, like I'd have learned way more off watching the likes of Bernard Brogan than I'd have learned off Jeremy Connolly and David Clifford, because them boys are freak shows.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetSet Go. Are you ready for quick start car insurance? Get a quote today at GetSetGo.ie.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
You're very welcome along to Friday Night Racing here on Off the Ball, brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie or follow the new Twitter account that is at HRI Racing, every racing moment. Will O'Callaghan in the hot seat on this Friday. Johnny Ward is with me as well. Johnny, how are you getting on ahead of Royal Ascot?
Yeah, great. It's a brilliant meeting, to be fair. Some strong Irish contenders. Obviously, the big teams. Jessica Harrington has a big team, Aidan O'Brien is a big team, but I think, like, when you look at some of the trainers, Joanna Morgan in recent years, I think Seamus Fahey, some of the smaller yards have had winners over there. That's what kind of, I think, gets Irish people jiggy when you get the likes of, hopefully, Aidan McGuinness to have a win at Royal Ascot. It's fantastic. It's bigger than Cheltenham for a flat trainer, because it's just so hard. I mean, I think last year there were five Irish trained winners, four of them trained by Aidan O'Brien. So it's very, very difficult. And, you know, it's special for the likes of Aidan to have a Group 1 runner, not to mind a winner. And there are race scores again, which is fantastic, because last year obviously it wasn't quite the same.
Yeah, about 4,000 people can attend each day. You've got to be a member of Ascot itself, or you have to be a trainer and owner in order to get in for the days. It all gets underway on this coming Tuesday. And I think about it, Johnny, that I like about Royal Ascot is it's so steeped in history. Like, this goes back to 1711, when the Queen decided to come along in a chariot and go to the race. And, you know, the Royals have been patrons of Royal Ascot ever since.
Who was the reigning monarch at that time?
Ooh, I'm not sure. You're going back a long time. I'm able to remember that 1711 is the date that they decided to make Ascot Royal, but I can't quite go back that far in the royal heritage. We might get the production team to check it.
Yeah, I'm sure there are people texting in right now who know the answer, but like, that's a long, long time. Racing goes back a long time. Like, when you think about it, what's association football is like 1850s, give or take. They were, you know, the Derby's named after Lord Derby, who had a bet with Lord Bunbury or something, what they'd call the race. And then you have, like, steeplechasing in Ireland was from the steeples of, was it Buttevant to Castlemartre or thereabouts anyway in that region. And that's going back a long, long time as well. Racing is steep in history. Her Majesty Queen Anne, we've been told.
There
Which
you go.
Queen Anne would that be, I wonder? I'm sure there were a few of them.
Well, the Queen Anne of the 18th century is what we'll say.
There we go. Yeah. Aidan McGuinness is, of course, well up in his royal regalia and all that.
Yeah, and Aidan McGuinness is with us. Aidan, how are you getting on? Are you well?
Great, thanks. Great.
What's the feeling a week out? I mean, I guess the final bits of hard work have probably been done ahead of your runners. I think you've got five in contention, at least in terms of the long list entries. But how's the work been going ahead of Royal Ascot next week?
Yeah, look, we put the finishing touches to KCU today, and Harry's Bar finished last week or early in the week, and we're very happy with them. And, you know, it's a matter of keeping them sound now and keeping them right and happy and fresh.
Well, as Johnny mentioned, I mean, this is right up there in terms of the flat. Like, we talk about the tradition and the prestige and the heritage around Royal Ascot, but so many Group 1 races coming up next week too. What's it like as a trainer getting ready? You know, potentially, when we talk about the Commonwealth Cup here, one of the big Group 1 races of the week, it must be incredibly exciting to be facing into, you know, the blue ribbon flat event of the summer in the UK.
Yeah, listen, we're very excited to have a horse capable of running in a race like that. I'm not one just to go and run a horse in a race, you know, with no hope. And we're very excited and privileged to have a horse good enough to go and compete in a race like this.
Well, we were kind of chatting earlier, myself and Johnny, we were trying to work out how many Group 1s you would have targeted before. Have you had many Group 1 races in your career along the way?
I've never had a Group 1 runner yet.
There you go.
You know, we've ran in Group 2s and Group 3s, and it was up until last August was our first ever listed, our black type success, and we've had four Group 3s and four listed races won since last August. But up until that, we've only ever had horses placed in one or two black type races.
You get lads and lassies who like runners and Group 1s, but like Aidan, to be fair, you're not like that. You're not going to run a horse that you think is there just to tog out and kind of get in the photograph.
No, I'd rather target a good premier handicap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, go back to Galway and win by two short heads and so on.
Yeah. But look, you have to, I suppose it's all a matter of knowing how good your horse is, really.
Is that key to next week as well? I mean, obviously, you know the work that's being done currently. Quite a bit. For listeners who might know this, Ed, a lot of the work being done on the beach in terms of the work that you do as well.
Yeah, we use the beach. The beach is a huge asset to us. And as I said, we galloped horses today on the Curra and they work quite hard. And they'll head to the beach first thing in the morning and it'll be a real chill out day for them. They'll walk across the water for 20 minutes up to their shoulder high and it'll be just so relaxing and it'll be great for their legs. And the horse will be chill out, they'll be chilled out and they'll be so fresh and well coming back off it. Like, and if you hadn't got it, like if you say play football and the next day after a very hard game of football, you're going to be stiff and sore.
This is the big thing now in the League of Ireland as well, that they go the morning after a game. Shamrock Rovers, there was a recent occasion where Shamrock Rovers players went to the beach on the Saturday morning, we'll say, after a game, and this is proper cold water, and as they arrived the St. Pat's players were coming out of the beach, that they were doing the same thing. And it's something that from a human perspective, I'm sure there's a mental benefit to it, but does it help the horses just in terms of to get their feet wet, get them in natural kind of treatment for just everyday things, I suppose?
Yeah, look, if you get out of your car and you drive down to the car park and get out of your car and go for a good walk across the beach and walk back to your car, you'll feel an awful lot more refreshed and fresh. And it's exactly the same for an animal, as well as to get them in there after being stiff and sore from legs and that, like, it's a great feeling for them, you know.
In terms of going on the beach as well, is it a little bit easier on their legs too by comparison? Did you mention, like, say you go for a run in the car after a warm week like this?
If you gallop the horse hard on the beach, you'll do an injury because the beach is quite hard itself, the sand. It's very dead.
Okay.
There's not much giving it. So I'd never gallop a horse on the beach. I'd give a horse a nice trot and maybe a very steady canter, but I'd never put a horse under pressure on the beach because you would break them down on the very hard sand.
How does Laytown work then?
Don't get me wrong, Laytown is not an easy thing on horses, and horses have to be used to it. There's certain horses won't handle it. I know a lot of lads gallop in Mornington on the beach, but there's a very soft 5 or 6 furlongs there. Like, you go into it, you'd probably go in 7 or 8 inches. It's a lovely soft base on it, and that's fine, but you could have it 3 inches in one spot, and you could be 6 inches in another spot. You got to know exactly where you're going when you gallop. Like, you could hit false ground, as we'd say, so... You have to know, you have to know what to do. But I'd never gallop a horse on the beach at home. It just goes trotting and steady cantering.
Sounds a lot more like recovery sessions. In terms of the horses for next week, we'll ask you about a case of you first, because, I mean, the final bits of preparation being done ahead of next week, and I'd imagine probably your biggest fancy for next week.
Yes, he's a very good horse. We were disappointed on his run in Leopardstown. That's the only blip in his copybook since we got him. He's run 3 times for me. If you go back to his very first run for us in Dundalk that night, he destroyed the field that night, and there was 2 very good horses behind him. One was Logo Hunter, belonged to Michael Brown, and the other was Jack Davison's horse, Munimis. Jack Davison, I'm not sure of his name.
Munimis, yeah.
Yeah. And, both them horses have come out. Like, we gave Logo Hunter £5 that night and 4 lengths of a beating. So that was a hell of a run. And I was disappointed in Leopardstown, but he pulled very hard and he just ran with the choke out, and he just didn't see out the trip. And I think dropping him back to the 6th in Nace, he was very good in Nace. He battled hard and he blew hard after the race, and I'd given him a little bit of time after Leopardstown to recover. So I think he'll improve again from Nace.
I'm always kind of intrigued, and I think we can hear Ferry House in the background there as you're getting ready for the evening meeting there, but like the process of actually working out the pathway for a horse after a good run, like say after that first run at Dundalk, blitz the field, you got a feeling you got a good horse in your hands. At that point, do you start thinking this horse might be okay in Group 1 company, or how far ahead do you actually plan?
Look, we always try and take baby steps, and as I said, Group 1 is the, you can't get any higher, and he's won his Group 3, he's won 2 Group 3s now, and there was no Group 2 there, so we have to step him up to Group 1. And looking at the horses he's beating, like, as I said, looking at Logo Hunter and some of Aidan's horses that he beat even last year up the Curra, and they've all competed and competed successfully in Group 1. It's not Logo Hunter, but Aidan's horses. So we have to take a chance and go forward. Like, and I'll never know what way he's going if I don't try it.
It's the stories as well, like the left field kind of... you know, background in that. I remember this horse started at Bellewstown, and there was a bit of word that the horse above average. It then bolted up and down Royal when it was sent off a big price, and then it had its day of deliverance at the Curragh, and that was when it was with John McConnell, and obviously the talk after races, this horse very valuable. How did you end up with the horse in Edo?
Yeah, look, we were looking for a very nice horse, and John hadn't sold the horse, and I approached John, and he asked me a price for it, and it suited our budget, and we bought it. And look, he wasn't a cheap horse. He's probably one of the most expensive horses I've had in the yard. But he's a cheap horse. If he goes to Ascot next week and does very well, he will be a very cheap horse.
You've made your reputation yourself and Stephen and the lads. Like, you don't buy horses necessarily for buttons, but you buy them at a sort of a competitive price that you think will do well. But this must have been one of the more pressurised runs, because he can't be cheap after what he's achieved for a horse. For a trainer who wouldn't have that many good horses, there's always this conception that, well, he'll improve. So there was a little bit of pressure on there that it sort of, if it backfired, you'd probably feel a bit sore about it, I suppose.
Yeah, but sure, when you have a very good two-year-old, there's always the case of the following year saying, oh, will he train on or will he not? Mm. And there's always that question mark when you see even Aidan with some very good two-year-olds and they don't train on, and you'll always have a question mark like that. And look, to our advantage, he did. We think he has trained on. He's proved it 2 out of 3 times this year so far. And I have no doubt in my mind that this horse will improve again. And he's a great attitude. He's a great mind, and you know, he's a dream horse to have.
Has he taken well to the beach?
He loves the beach. Mm. It's where he was an old handicapper going into the water, and that's been honest. And he just has a great mind, and he doesn't fret. He never, you know, doesn't sweat going racing or anything like that. He leaves it all to the racetrack, which is great. You know, all his energy goes into that. You know, you'd have some horses, they go racing and they're very, you know, they get upset, they don't travel well or things like that, but this horse does everything very easy.
And what was the chat with Gary Devlin, the owner, in the sense of, you know, this is a, you know, it's a big purchase, you must be delighted, and he must be delighted that, you know, it's worked out so far with 2 wins as a 3-year-old.
Yeah, look, they're looking forward to, he worked this morning up the Curragh, as I said, and Gary rang me at lunchtime. He said, well, are we going or are we not? Mm. You know, and I said, definitely going. And he's very excited about going over there next week. There's a few of his friends and that, and they're going over, and they're really looking forward to having a good week there in Ascot.
That's what the crack's about, Will, as well.
Yeah, incredibly. Yeah, like, we're just in terms of, I was chatting to some of your team earlier, Edo, about just getting the experience, getting ready for next week too. It seems this time around, you know, you factor in Brexit, you factor in the COVID-19 protocols and everything around the racing as well. There's a lot of work being done in the background by your team to actually get everything ready to get over there for next Tuesday.
Yeah, I think Brexit is nearly a bigger problem than the COVID. Like, Brexit with transporting horses back and forth England is a nightmare, and you have to go, you know, we've had to go to the Department of Agriculture this morning to get a carnet, and you have to lodge money into an account, and you have to pay a fee to get, you know, to get this carnet back from the department, and we have to get a vet out from the Department of Agriculture to inspect the horse and microchip the horse to make sure he's sound and safe to go to travel to England. And then you have to get a, as I said, we're using a transport company because we'll be busy next week with our own transport at home going racing. And the same coming back from England, you have to, the vets have to come and inspect the horse again in England to make sure he's fit to travel back to Ireland. Your papers have to be all stamped up, and then you have to send that back into the Dublin Chamber of Commerce and get your money back that you lodged into an account. And you still have to pay for them vets over there to inspect your horses. So overall, I'd say on each individual horse travelling back and forth England, you're looking at an extra €600 or €700 per horse.
Jessica Harney said this earlier. She was saying even around the 800 figure. Does this mean that your average run-of-the-mill, you know, Irish trainers with a certain type of horse have massively benefited from trips to the UK? Does this mean that this is, like, that sort of notion is becoming almost redundant if this goes on?
Well, it is, Johnny. And the other thing is the BHA have stopped the low-grade horses from Ireland going, the class 5 and the class 6 horses not allowed run in England anymore. Let it be the flatter of on the hurdles. So if you take, say, an 80 rated hurdler going to England, he'd usually have a great chance. He can't do that anymore because he's not allowed run in a class 5 and a class 6 hurdle. And that's a BHA rule they brought in last year. And Gordon would have travelled a lot. Gavin travelled a lot. Mm. I always went to Wolverhampton in January with a bunch of horses that you might think might struggle in Dundalk, and we've been quite successful doing that. So we can't do that anymore. So it's, and even if you could do it, it's going to cost an awful lot of money, and it's a huge thing. And like, that's why you see all the runners. There's not many runners in Perth. The only horses that are running are up in Perth or up in Scotland at the moment are the horses from north of Ireland. So it's very expensive, and you will not bring just an ordinary run-of-the-mill horse across because it's too expensive.
What's the thinking on that rule, Edo? Because like, that sounds to me like a real artificial barrier for smaller yards, particularly to be able to go over to the UK now.
Well, definitely. It is an artificial barrier, and I'm on the trainers' committee. We have approached them, and they're in no way lifting it at the moment. I spoke to Gordon Elliott about it a while back, and I spoke to Gavin was on about it, and they're not going to lift it at the present moment. And as I said, I used to travel a horse. If I thought a horse could win in England and he couldn't win in Ireland, well, I would travel him to England, but I can't do that now anymore with that low-grade horse.
So this might be a stupid question, but was that brought in originally as a COVID measure?
It was brought in as a COVID measure, and yet it's a ridiculous rule, because if you have a Class 4 horse, you can go to the meeting in Wolverhampton and run in a Class 4 race, but if you have a Class 5 horse and a Class 6 horse, you can't. So that doesn't really make much sense.
I'm not speaking for the BHA here, but that is interesting, because like, there would probably be some resentment in Britain that the Irish trainers come over and do so well. But on the flip side, they're making far, far better racing. And like Edo as well, you spoke about Gordon. Like, Perth became, like, Gordon loved going to Perth, but Perth put up good prize money, and the quality of the racing over there was very good as a consequence.
Yeah, the quality was great, and Perth loved to see the Irish coming over there, and even the owners went over there and had a couple of days and had a bit of a holiday, and they really enjoyed themselves. And if you look at Perth at this present moment in time, there's more English runners in it now than they ever had, because the Irish aren't there at the present moment. And it's a very unfair rule. We don't stop if an Englishman wants to come over here and run a knot to 65, he can. You know, we don't stop them, and it's an unfair rule. And hopefully they might see sense before the season is out, but at this moment in time, they're not lifting that rule at the moment.
Well, Johnny, I don't want to get Edo into trouble here, so I can ask you about this. This sounds a little bit like protectionism from British racing.
Yeah, again, like, I don't, I can't speak for the actual reasoning behind it. I think, to be fair, with COVID, it was a big deal to bring over horses to Britain. It was a lot of a headache, but like, the mess that Brexit is in general, you know, the people who voted for Brexit, probably some of them might have a bet on a horse, but they little thought of the complications for Irish trainers. The tripartite agreement between the French, the Irish and the British worked well, but the relationship between Ireland and Britain racing wise is so important that if there are barriers to us like going over there, it'll massively, I think, affect British racing for the worse. As much as Ireland dominated at Cheltenham, they're very reliant on us, like back in the day buying horses out of here, but you know, there's a lot of trade between the two countries, and I know HRI have done an awful lot of work, and this has been years in the planning of dealing with Brexit. But something like that effectively came out of a COVID situation where, you know, understandably Irish horses couldn't go over for a while because there was basically very little transport. It's something that I'm inclined to think I'll want to look into now, because, you know, those meetings are far better off for Irish runners. Whether you like it or not, they make them better standard. And as Edo said, I used to love seeing British horses come to Dundalk. Mark Johnson did it a lot. It basically increased the quality of the action, and it made it for, if you have an English raider at any Irish meeting, it's a talking point. It's something that's interesting.
It's in every preview, the English raider.
Yeah. Like last night, so Jessica Harrington won the big race, but there was a Jim Rack runner-up running in the race, and I love seeing British horses target. Like, Frankie Dettori came to Killarney for a meet there a few years ago, and it was a massive deal. Like, it was a really big deal. And, you know, English trainers have massively targeted Laytown, actually, Jamie Osborne in the Melbourne 10. And, like, Edo, you just on that. I know we're here to talk about Royal Ascot, but, like, the Melbourne 10 lads and Jamie Osborne, what they have done for Laytown, they've turned it into a really, really enjoyable meet, even though it was that already. Like, and we want that. We don't not want that.
Yeah, listen, Laytown is so unique, and I've had so many English, I've a good few English owners at the moment, and I've had so many English owners want to come to Laytown, not Leopardstown, they want to come to Laytown to experience that day at the races, and some of them would love to have a runner in it, and it's just, And Jamie and that, like, we'd have a bit of banter. I know last year, or the last time we were there, we had a great evening, and even the year before that. And these guys really enjoy themselves over there. They have a great, there's a good bunch of lads, and they party, and they have a really good day in Leopardstown races. They stay over for a couple of days, and you know, that's what racing's all about for the ordinary fella.
Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. We're talking Dado McGuinness, getting ready for the horses he's trained ahead of Royal Ascot. Just to look at the first runner you're potentially going to have next week. Boorman is in at the moment for the Hunt Cup. Is he likely runner on Wednesday?
Yeah, Boorman definitely go to the Hunt Cup. Look, he's been running and listed in Group 3s. He'd won or two not great runs. He'd a very good run. He won the big race in Doha early on in the year, and unfortunately, in Ireland, you have to carry a Group 3 penalty, which he is. So he's lumping 10 stone all the time again. Three-year-olds that he's given probably £15 and £18 to. And look, we're dropping him back into a handicap company. And the last time he ran the handicap, he won the Irish Lincoln. So hopefully he can be very competitive over there in a big race like that. They'll go good and fast, and I'm looking forward to him dropping him back into handicap company.
He was a great buy. I think he's a really likeable horse. Who do you think he'll ride? And like, would you think, obviously, the strong field and the, you know, we spoke about Doha, but the strong field and the likely ground and the good gallop over the mile at Susan, who'll ride him?
Well, Ronan has gone over for a couple of days, so Ronan, Colin Keane, I know Ronan or Colin is there. I know the guys were talking about maybe claiming off him. So I haven't exactly put a rider on Bowman's back yet, but I have the option of the three guys. Colin and Ronan have won on the horse, so more than likely it'd be one of them two guys.
So that's very interesting, because like a horse like that, he clearly won't have much in hand, which may preclude him from winning the race. So what's the dilemma there in terms of Colin Keane, possibly the best jockey in both islands, if you want to call him that, are taking on a £5, £7 claimer, which might be the difference?
Well, the way I always look at it, Ger Lyons is Colin Keane's boss, and very seldom do I ever see Ger Lyons replacing Colin with a £7 claimer.
Point taken.
So that would answer your question.
Yeah. Ger is never wrong as well.
What?
Ger is never wrong.
I'm only just saying what Ger does. I've never seen him jockey Colin off for a £7 claimer. Yeah. And, you know, Colin is top class. And Ronan either or, they've both won on the horse, and they both know the horse very well. So it'll be a toss-up probably between one of them.
Not a bad position to be in, where you've got, you know, two riders with previous experience and previous winning experience as well.
Yeah, listen, I suppose I'm lucky that the two guys are going over and they're two top-class riders, and I'm privileged that I'd be able to get one of them.
Well, taking a look down at the rest of the entries, maybe later in the week, it might be more a case of finding out during the week next week, but Harry's Bar, where are we at now with that horse head of next week?
He'll run the King's Stand first on Tuesday.
Right.
They were saying he was a far better all-weather horse than a grass horse. I spoke to Fran Berry before, and Fran said to me that, Ascot will always suit an all-weather horse. But listen, we ran him in Naas that day. He finished second in the listed race in Naas. He was rated 100 on the grass. He was 106 on the all-weather. And Davison's Jack's horse beat us, but we gave it £18 that day. So it was a hell of a performance from him to finish second. And as I said, Muneesta will never ever have to give him that, we'll never have to give him that weight, give her that weight again. And I think he's well, he got £6 for that run that day, and I still think he's a few pound up his sleeve. So we're going to chance the Group One with him, and he's in serious good form, and I think he's a hell of a horse. He's a very, very good horse.
Do you remember the dam of the horse for Enze, right, for James Fanshawe?
Can't say I do now, I tell you about
it. But was actually, just seeing this ran at Royal Ascot in second in the Wokingham. I do remember the horse under Jamie Spencer. In 2006, we're talking about the first Royal Ascot in 1711. But yeah. Did you ever find out where Harry's Bar was, actually?
No, I never did. There's plenty of Harry's Bars all over the world.
Is that, like, to have two runners in a Group One in over the meet is amazing, really.
Yeah, look, as I said, Harry's Bar entered into Wokingham as well, but we would have been preferred to go in there if we'd only had the 100 rate with the second place in Naas, gave us the £6. But I suppose it all depends. If you finish second or third in the Group One, you could turn and goes up, say, £5 or £6, you could turn around and say, well, maybe we'll go to the Wokingham on Saturday instead of the Diamond Jubilee. But we have him in both them races next week, and if he runs well on Tuesday, he'll definitely pitch out in one of them races on Saturday.
Plenty of options, but I guess it's all determined by Tuesday. You don't actually have a plan for Saturday as yet.
No, I would probably prefer to go six with him.
Okay.
But we've him entered in both races, and he ain't no slow horse, that's for sure. And looking at his work and the way he works at home, and I think he'll run a massive big race next week.
Intrigued about what you said about Fran Berry there, saying that Ascot maybe suits horses that have already run well on the all-weather. What is it about Ascot then that compares favourably with all-weather tracks?
I would just say that, like, the turf is just fabulous in it. It's like so manicured. It's just a beautiful surface. It's will be, don't get me wrong, it will be fast if the weather, but it looks at things, the weather forecast is very good, but they will have it so well watered. You walk down across the turf from that, it's just, you know, it's a fabulous surface.
Yeah, looking at the weather forecast, Sunday and Monday are meant to be really good. I think there's a little bit of rain on Tuesday, but the ground is going to be in absolutely perfect condition ahead of it. Laugh a Minute at the moment could potentially run next week, but I believe the possibility is more to go towards the Curragh here.
Yeah, he wouldn't be as good a horse to travel as the other boys. He just doesn't travel as well, and we have him in a box at home, a companion box at home, and he's so well settled in it. When we got him first, he wasn't, and he's just so chilled out in it, and I have a feeling that if I go travel him over there, he just mightn't travel as well, and we've decided we'll skip him. You know, we'll skip it, and I think he likes a little bit more juice in the ground as well, so we're going to skip him and just wait. You know, we're going to wait with him.
I always find that psychology side of things interesting too, because a lot of people probably just assume a horse is a horse, you're going to put into a horse box, bring him over to England next week, no big deal. But you know from working with these horses intimately that, you know, this horse won't potentially go across and run well after a trip, and maybe better off to run a bit closer to home.
Yeah, look, most people would always like to try and keep horses in their own environment for as much as possible and as long as possible. Like Aidan flies his horses over every day. You know, flies them into London City Airport and brings them to Ascot and flies them back home that night. So they're only away from the stables for a few hours, which would be a great way to do it if you could afford it.
They're travelling better than I travel to London.
Yeah. They're travelling better than most of us. But it's, you will get some horses will travel no problem, but some other horses just don't take the travelling as well. And we often have to bring our own water for the first 2 days because they mightn't drink the water over there. So that little things like that, it's a huge factor. If you have a horse that mightn't take a drink for 10 hours in warm weather, he'll dehydrate. So you have to be, you know, you have to keep an eye on all that.
There was the lovely anecdote about when Paddy Mullins won the Irish Oaks, which would have been his first classic anyway. Paddy was, I'm sure he was like well into, probably into his 80s at the time. So Ado has plenty of time to win a classic or whatever. But Vintage Tipple was a... Vintage Tipple was a bad... she didn't like transport, like, not to mind. I don't doubt she ever ran abroad, but she didn't like being in on the road. Like, so Paddy used to load her into the horse box and get in and sit and stand beside her for the duration of their journey so that she'd be calm. And, like, that's what sets horse people apart from us normal mortals. Like, Paddy could have been in his mid-80s at the time, straight in with the thoroughbred, who was obviously a little bit anxious just to calm her down. And I love little stories like that, because horses are, they're beautifully complex creatures as well, mentally and physically.
That's the genius of it, Johnny. If you know a horse is temperamental and this is what you have to do, it's what we probably call in football good man management.
Absolutely, 100%, 100%. And, like, it's something, Ado, I think that... speaking to Jessica Hind about this week, she can't really put her finger on it, but she thinks she knows, she can see something in a horse that, I don't know, it might set some trainers apart from others. But there is a man management there as well.
Of course there is. And yeah, you could see a horse in the gallop in the morning and you might just, you say, no, we won't walk him or we won't gallop him this morning. He just doesn't look the way. And I've often done that, and that's a decision I have to make when I look at a horse sometimes. And I think most trainers like that do the same thing. And it's not just that you'd often look in at a horse someday. I'd often walk down through the barn at night time there looking in at horses, and you could notice a horse that could be sick or is not a good bright eye on him. You know, he's a little bit dull in his eye, and you go in and you check him out. If there's no pinkness in his gums, he could have white, you know, he could be just white. And that's when you'd fight, you know, you determined a sick horse. And all these little things are things that help out. Like when the worst thing you can do is go and do something to a horse that's not feeling well.
Ada, before you know, we let you at sick. Ferry House there for the evening, just wondering about next week, your feeling about the fact, Johnny and I were talking about at the top, at least having 4,000, we'll call them patrons, actually in attendance for Royal Ascot next week, that's going to lift the meeting this year a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah, without doubt. I've been speaking, there's a few of my owners from England heading to Royal Ascot, and it's great. It's even great to see a few owners. There's a few of my owners coming this evening now today to Ferry House, which it's brilliant to get these guys back, because at the end of the day, only for the owners, they kept this industry going this last 14, 15 months, keeping horses in training, keeping stable staff and jobs, and you know, they're the people that kept this whole industry going.
I think that really, really needs to be emphasised, in that if you're an owner for the last, since March of last year, there was a 3-month dilemma of not really knowing roughly when you could have a horse in training that you didn't know, were you just wasting money on this? And then you can't go racing. Even for the brief time you could go racing, there wasn't much enjoyment in it. Prize money was necessarily down because of the situation. And owners have showed unbelievable commitment, because maybe it was something to keep them occupied during lockdown. But like, all of the joys of being an owner were almost taken away from you, and owners deserve huge credit for that.
Yeah, and I imagine, Edo, you'd be very thankful of those owners along the way to, you know, continue investing in terms of the training fees and everything during the last year as well.
Yeah, because we bought some new horses, like even at the horse and training sale in October, and we sold them, you know, we sold them after it, and the owners still weren't guaranteed to get out and see the horses run, and they still invested, which, you know, you can't thank them enough. And as I said, only for them, the industry would have been in trouble. And the sales are very strong at the moment. The National Hunt sales this week in Goffs has been, you know, very strong. Yearling sales have been very good last year. The Breeze Up sales were very strong. So it's great to see the owners back and, you know, spending money. And that's very, very important.
Do you have the top hat and the suit ready for next week?
Well, I got the number at the place there where I got it last year, or the year before last, so I have to go now and make sure I get it.
It won't be quite as busy as last year.
No, I think you'd be in and out of the suit shop a bit quicker than you maybe would have been a couple of years ago. Edo, look, the best of luck next week, particularly having a couple of horses in Group 1 company as well. Thanks a million for joining us on Friday Night Racing.
Cheers, thanks very much.
Well, look, the tote, Johnny, I'm going to have a look at where you are in this, because we're on June the 11th. I'm looking at Tom Malone's lead now at this stage in the tote 10 to follow. Unassailable is the word that has been used, and I think you're probably right. So second place for Siliway at Shanty, pushing him over the 100 points mark, which is remarkable, because you've got Jerry Gilroy on 4.2, we've got Johnny Ward on 21.6, and there is the boy Tom Malone, 103 points already achieved.
I'm glad that Jerry makes my bad situation look somewhat better. That's all I can really say, like, I'm getting a battering here.
Well, hold on now, we've got bonus points which are available for Royal Ascot, so maybe the dream isn't entirely over, but you're going to have a pretty good week here if you're going to get anywhere near Tom Malone.
Yeah, like Ger and I had obviously the battle in the jumps was a lot closer than this, but yeah, Tom's done very well. He's picked the right horses and I haven't so far, so yeah, that's about all I can say, really.
Well, the Tote 10 to follow minigame for Royal Ascot is open for entries. You can go onto the tote.ie, but you have to have your entries in before Wednesday, which is the 15th, if you want to play along for Royal Ascot next week. Any particular fancies you have for next week, Johnny, in terms of the racing at Ascot?
Yeah, I think Jessica Harrington's Lucky Vega will go very well in the St. James Palace. He's a stallion career, and I got a bit of word for a horse trained by my namesake, Wesley Ward, actually. Now, Wesley Ward comes over and targets this meet. I think he must love the American prize money so good. But, like, when you bring over a sprinter here from the American sprinters tend to be very fast. So he does bring horse over and does well. But he's a horse called Lucci running this week. Now, I honestly wouldn't have a clue about American racing, but...
Is this you now a bit like the English Raiders coming over to Dundalk, where you're like, there's an American runner, so therefore less respected for coming across?
100%. Only in this case, there's a lot of, like, prestige and... Like, Wesley Ward loves Royal Ascot winners, and these would be proper good horses. So Lucci's running in the Norfolk, which isn't priced up yet. Mm-hmm. Keep an eye on that, because, like, it's a generalisation, but his horses generally would want fast ground. So that little bit of rain you're talking about on the Sunday or Monday might be a deal. It should be grand. But that came all the way across the Atlantic Ocean, yeah, Lucci. So keep an eye out for that. But I am definitely looking forward to Ados horses as well. I think... He's made a good case for two horses there that are huge prices for their respective races, and keep an eye out on for Yet as well, a horse trained by Aidan O'Brien, who will be running the two-year-old race, and another horse Aidan had that won the maiden at the Curra recently, the first race, I forget his name actually, very, very promising horse. He'll be running he'll be running in the Chesham, which I actually, if you give me one moment, I'll find his name. And hopefully, I'd say that they just want maybe a slightly better results than last year, because like the Irish didn't, five winners would be barren enough. So I don't actually, I can't get the Chesham Stakes up. Aidan O'Brien's horse, the one at Curragh first time out, he's running the Chesham, I forget his name, bolted up. I think Lucky Vega must have a great chance. Jesse's really happy with him.
Yeah. What did you make of last weekend? I mean, it was a Derby weekend. The Derby itself wasn't a bad race.
There were the three Group 1 races. The Coronation was an amazing race. It was really weird. I was traveling, and basically I was asked very, very lastminute.com to review the documentary the BBC are doing on Shergar.
Right.
So I was kind of like, it's narrated by Vanilla Ice. So it's kind of bizarre, but it's called something like...
How did Vanilla Ice end up narrating a Shergar documentary?
No, I was trying to explain that. I'm not sure what the concept was. Was it like, is it for an American audience? But it's a BBC podcast. Yeah. I think it's like 6-part series. So I was thinking it'd be something like West Cork, like quite serious. And, you know, we don't know the answer to this, but maybe after listening to the podcast, you'll know more about it. But Vanilla Ice was...
Maybe Liam Neeson was busy for this one.
Yeah, Liam Neeson. God, he'd be a lovely voice for something. No.
This is where Johnny has been fed Point Lonsdale into his ear the potential horse.
Let me get this.
Go on, you keep telling me about Vanilla Ice.
But anyway, so like I was listening to the, I was cramming into it, so I was supposed to review the first episode or whatever, supposed to review it. And in the middle of it, I had to pause to watch the Oaks. And then Snowfall won the Oaks almost exactly like Shergar. It was like she won by 16 lengths or something. It was a ridiculous performance. You don't see that. And then the Derby was... the Derby was so compelling because all of the preparation that went into Bolshoi Bally, and then Ballydoyle deciding that one horse was enough, which is a very, very rare thing for Ballydoyle to do, it completely backfired because the only horse they ran effectively got injured in the race, and they might have won it with High Definition. Anyway, that's by the by. But Frankel provided the winner and the third, so that'll be interesting for his career. And Adam Kirby, who'd be seen as a sort of an all-weather jockey, something of a journeyman, winning the Derby was a great result for racing as well. But
I always like the story around it where Frankie Dettori openly admits, look, I made a decision that puts Kirby onto the winner.
He was 40-1 or whatever that day, but you could make a case for him. But I think when you're looking for a successor to Galileo as a stallion, Frankel would have been the heir apparent. He was by far his best horse, and basically Point Longsdale is the name of the horse. Sorry.
So
Point Longsdale,
JP Gilborn, researcher on the program, doing some fantastic research in the background, which Johnny Ward writes off at first and then eventually does a bit.
Well, he called you Joe twice there recently, so
force of habit.
I mean, JP's not here to defend himself, but he's a full brother to Broom, that horse.
Okay.
He's by Australia. So all these stallions, kind of, it's a lot of guff, but like Australia's the son of Galileo, who's not necessarily proven himself at stud yet, but Frankel was sent all of like the best women around. Frankly, got them. Like, he was the Brad Pitt of his time,
the
or whatever.
The horse of his generation. He's understandably the stud.
Everyone wants to be with Frankel, but the kids got to be good. Like, the kids can't be duds. Like, the kids have to be fast, and he's now as a Derby winner. So this is a big year for Frankel, and I think you know, he's going to have a lot of top class winners. But it was good for Adam Kirby. But it was a mad like the two classics, in that Frankie Dettori wasn't riding the favourite for Ballydoyle. He was riding obviously Snowfall. She was amazing performance, and she could go off to the Ark now and become like a Zarkava and just win it as she likes. But it was a fantastic race. I thought it was really compelling.
Frankie was very keen on her possibility of being a Longchamp winner straight after the race. Like, that's understandable. The horse bounds home by 15 or 16 minutes.
Like, obviously you have to kind of look at that and say, like, if a good hurling team beats a similarly good hurling team by 226 to sort of 14 points or whatever, you're like, is that real? So I want to see them one more time. But she's a three-year-old getting a three-year-old filly's allowance like Zarkava did. She's an awful lot going for her. And her performances at two, like I used to follow her a bit at two because she's by Deep Impact, a stallion I love. But her two-year-old form just tailed off, and I don't know why, but she reappeared in the trial and was very impressive. But her exponential improvement, if she were to improve again from the Oaks, she must have a massive chance. And she's a lovely name as well, Snowfall. So, yeah.
Snowfall, 16-length winner last week. That is us on Friday Night Racing for this Friday. If you missed any of the show, you can catch up on the OTB Sports app, and we'll chat you again at 3 p.m. next Friday.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetSetGo. Are you ready for quick start car insurance? Get a quote today at GetSetGo.ie.